And yes, talking about the power of plants, we're talking about foraging wild edibles outside your door. And with us now is an expert on the topic of foraging and somebody really who loves to go out and search for wild edibles, Cammie McBride. She's the author of The Herbal Kitchen, and the website is livingawareness.com. She's the founder of the Living Awareness Institute, actually, as an herbalist, an herbal instructor, and so much more. She's joining us today from Vacaville, California. Cammie, do we have you on the line?
I'm here. Thank you.
you're not out harvesting, foraging. Good. Thanks for spending the hour with us.
And welcome back to the show. We had such a wonderful interview with you. Healing with herbs, the wisdom of ancient remedies, has been a many times re-aired episode, a fan favorite, one of our personal favorites. And when we wanted to do this topic of foraging, it was really perfect that you just came up as somebody we should have back on.
Yeah, I'm so glad that this interest is growing and that the interest in healing plants is really becoming a movement, actually. So many more people interested. I'm really happy to be part of this.
What an apropos time, of course. June, July, maybe as early as May, kind of the season of sustainable agriculture at least starts, and then all the way into September and October. Just to kick it off with the seasonality, I'm surprised you're actually available for an interview and you're not out foraging, but is this the key time, or would you say that really foraging can be done year-round?
You know, I think it really just depends on where you live. That's really a big factor. In some places, you know, I live in Northern California and I forage year-round. I mean, I really do. There are some amazing edible medicinal weeds that I can gather every month of the year. But it just really, if you're in a colder climate,
sure,
that's not true.
And under snow, it's possible, but I'm sure it's much, much, much more tricky to do so. But this is really the time. If somebody was to listen to this episode and wanted to go out in the next few days or next couple of weeks to start somewhere with some easy to identifiable plants, hopefully this hour will provide the foundation for that. But I want to start off with the conversation that already began between you and Sita. The world has really taken a remarkable leap forward when it comes to eco-literacy and food awareness and our resourcefulness and how to use cuttings and leftovers. And there's just an entire new relationship to food. And this wave of food awareness and mindfulness is taking us back to our roots, really, backyard gardening and, of course, the practice of foraging. It's amazing to me when I walk through the neighborhood this time of year, July, August, September, and I see trees where ripe fruit is literally falling onto the street and being wasted. While I know that, you know, in cities like San Francisco, this food could be feeding people who are hungry that night. So there is almost a responsibility, I feel, besides the fun and the pleasure of just going out and harvesting things in the wild, but there's almost a responsibility of not letting everything just go to waste that nature is literally just throwing at us or throwing down on us. Can you talk about the world of food foraging? Why do you love it, and what does it really mean?
Well, for me, you know, I've really, for my entire adult life, I've been gathering up information and putting together this body of knowledge to really create this, what I call the home wellness revolution, people really being able to care for themselves and not being reliant on over-the-counter medications. I mean, if you need drugs sometimes, okay, that's okay. But, you know, it's not that many generations ago. Maybe it's our grandmother, maybe it's your great-grandmother, maybe it's your great-great-grandmother, that there was someone in your home that knew how to take care of the family, how to prevent illness, how to use seasonal foods to help prepare you for the wellness of the following season, how to feed your family and take care of your family on a budget. I mean, wild foods are free. And so it really is about the reclamation and the revival of a home art that involves connecting with our bodies, connecting with the earth, connecting with the plants, and bringing all that together back in the home as an art, a home craft. Because that is where your children and your, you know, the people younger than you grow up learning how to take care of themselves. I mean, I've been practicing and teaching I've been teaching herbal medicine for 27 years. And the lack of body literacy right now, and the lack of literacy around cooking among young people, and you're supposed to just all of a sudden grow up and then know how to take care of yourself. It's only if it's practiced in the home, you know, how to use healing plants, how to really cook and use foods to take care of yourself. So for me, it's really just one piece of this overall movement that's happening of, you know, reclaiming this home art.
I love that, actually. And you were saying wild foods are free, and they do take a big resource that is scarce, it seems, for most people, which is time. You save the dollar, but you do need to invest a little bit of time. And that's usually the trade, right? Do you want convenience where everything comes from the store in just a second and you pay for that convenience? And if you go into prepared foods, it's even more expensive. Or can you go back to the origin, leave the dollar at home, invest a little bit of time and harvest your own? I love your summary. And yeah, let's hope that that food awareness or home wellness movement, really what it's all about, keeps growing.
Already, I feel like I'm having a cup of tea with a friend that I've been dying to catch up with for a long time. Because when you're here, I feel like there's a part of me that wakens up. That's just the natural herbalist or the birthright of relationship to nature and bringing that into family is it's awakened. And, you know, as a chef, this has been an interesting topic about food foraging, because I know a lot of chefs who go out and find wonderful wild edibles that they bring into their restaurants, and even a chef in San Francisco who one of his specialties was mushroom foraging. But that is an area that I have never dared tread, because mushrooms, they can be extremely dangerous. So you have to know how to forage them safely. And there are ways to safely forage, and I'm hoping that you can talk us through that a bit. I know the world of weeds and herbs in particular is something that you do a fair amount of, and letting us know how you can do it safely and whether, you know, foraging for weeds can ever be dangerous.
That's a great question. You know, I love what you said. Actually, my great-grandparents were mushroom foragers, and my grandfather used to harvest wild mushrooms and sell them to pay his college tuition.
Wow, really?
So it is possible, but it's something that, you know how the things you learned as a child stick with you?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this art is about being mentored. Mm-hmm. You know, we are a quick-click culture. It's like, oh, I looked it up on the internet. I know how to do it. This is something that it's really important to be mentored in. You need to have 125% accurate identification of your plants, period. You need to know what they are without a doubt. It's not like, oh, I just saw that picture. I think this is what I'm picking. No, you need to have someone show you the plant. And so wherever you live, I guarantee there is one person in your town or your city that knows the wild local plants. Even if you have to go seek out an old timer, if you start asking, you will find that person, because really the best way is to be shown. I mean, even you can look at 100 books in a picture. I posted a blog post recently about mallow, and I had people sending me pictures saying, is this it? Is this it? And I couldn't believe what people were sending back. And so I do not recommend starting to forage by looking at a book, looking for a mentor, somebody. That's the old way. I mean, it's a new thing to think we can just look something up in a book. We have it in us to be mentored, to have somebody lovingly show us this relationship with the plants that you're talking about, this inheritance of what it really means to be human on this planet. We've always had a relationship with the plants. It's a little bit broken right now, but like what you were saying is you can feel it. And that's, you know, in all my years of teaching, so many people say that to me. My students say, God, I didn't even really know what it was that was missing. But now I know. I know that having the plants on my side and really understanding the plants is just part of what it means to be human and to run a household. So safety, 100%, even more accuracy. Have somebody show you. You know, I was raised in an area where there were a lot of old women that would go out and gather the mustard greens early spring. None of the young people did it. Not my parents didn't do it, but you see these old women out in the field every spring. People are like, what are they doing now? People are remembering, oh, yeah, that's important.
Well, in terms of safety, of course, you're looking on the internet or in a book at a two-dimensional image, and you're not seeing the plants that are around that plant, which it's one of the determining factors, seeing the vegetation around it or what it feels like or really looks like or what the underside look. I mean, there's a limit to a two-dimensional image, but what you're really reflecting for us here is the limit of the internet and the limit of books. What you're reflecting is the need or desire. It's really a human need for connection. I think we're just beginning to understand that the connection that is suggested through social media, for example, has its limits. It's there, but it's only there in a very limited capacity. And the connection, of course, it doesn't go as far as human connection or connection to nature or connection to human and nature at the same time, a mentor. So it's really, it sounds like foraging for you is this nature awareness that's as important of the harvest, whether or not you bring anything edible back, as the actual wild edibles that you might be able to forage. Just being in nature with a mentor and seeing we might not harvest anything today, but this is what could be eaten, and I'm going to show you. So there's the safety to maybe an elder or at least a mentor, and there's the safety of what is being taught within your physical environment of nature itself.
Yeah, that you know, deep nature connection. And also, you can't smell through a book. You know, you can look at that plant, but the plants, the way they attract, one of the amazing ways they attract is through smell. And when I see, you know, when my students will say, oh, I can't remember, what's the name of that plant, And I say, okay, stop, what do you need to do? Get down on your knees, smell the plant. And then they smell it and they go, oh, yeah, I remember what that is. And so one of the ways that you learn the plant is really by indexing it through your senses. You have to index through taste, if it's taste, you know, you don't start out tasting, but it's like, what's the texture, what's the color, what's the smell? The smell goes beyond everything. Even when you can no longer remember the name or what it's for, you remember the plant through the sense of smell. And we have lost that, you know, our sense of smell and a lot of our sensory awarenesses. And yeah, I think part of this movement is that people, I mean, we know where we are in terms of the planet. We don't need to talk about that right now. We know we're on the brink of a lot of things right now. And we know we're supposed to live with seven generations in mind. But how do we do that if you weren't raised that way? If you don't find a way to forge a deep connection and feel deeply related to the earth and in love with the earth and the plants, how are we going to do what needs to be done? And I really feel that it's through this, through connecting and falling back in love with the plants around us, that's going to help take us forward. And that's what I really work on. I mean, sure, this plant's for that and this plant's for that, but let's stop, slow down, and remember that our plants are our teachers, they're our relatives, and that, you know, we're on this planet together.
And that's, of course, Cammie McBride, if you haven't figured that out by now, who's the author of The Herbal Kitchen and a guest that we re-invited after an amazing show a couple of years back, who's joining us today from Vacaville. She is the founder of the Living Awareness Institute, an herbalist and herbal instructor, and again, the author of an amazing book, The Herbal Kitchen. In this hour of an organic conversation on foraging wild edibles outside your front door. Cammie, we'll take a quick break, but we'll be right back, so please stay on the line. This is an organic conversation, yes. And I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll be right back with more. Stay tuned.
Are you interested in making healthy food your profession? Bowman College is a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Their professional training programs prepare individuals for successful careers as nutrition consultants and natural chefs. Study at one of four locations in California and Colorado, or learn from home in a self-paced mentor distance learning program. Find out more about their classes on holistic nutrition and culinary arts at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And with us on the phone from Vacaville, California, Northern California, is Cammie McBride, the author of The Herbal Kitchen, livingawareness.com, her website. She's the founder of the Living Awareness Institute, on this hour on foraging wild edibles outside your front door. Cammie, I have a quick question. So just to clarify that, before the break, you said, of course, with mushrooms, you do want to absolutely know what you're doing. But even when it comes to other edibles, there are weeds or plants, you absolutely want to know what you're doing. You're saying not just mushrooms, there are other things that can be toxic or really upset your digestive system or stomach when you eat them, when you harvest them incorrectly. Is that correct? It's not just that, the mushroom world.
That's correct. That's why, you know, I say 125% accurate identification. Yes. That's why I say get a mentor, because
great.
People die every year from picking and eating the wrong thing. That happens
sure.
every year in this country. So, yeah, there are toxic plants out there. You don't just jump in a car and start driving. You have somebody show you a little bit how to do it first.
Sure.
You know, well, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the non-toxic plants. What is even possible out there to forage? I heard you mention one. You said mallow was something that you've talked about. Mustard greens. Yes, exactly. What can be foraged?
Okay, where I love to start is with the most common, where that grows, you know, in the crack on the step outside your front door, or in the crack in the sidewalk, or the weeds that are busting up the asphalt, although that's not where you want to harvest them. You definitely want to harvest them away from cars and pollution. But my favorite weed to forage is dandelion. It grows everywhere. It's something that a lot of people have, you know, they have an awareness of what it is because maybe they've been spraying pesticides on it to try to get it out of their lawn. I think that's a little bit of a statement, you know, it's like here's this amazing healing weed growing all around us and we pull it out and poison it and don't even know that it's kind of the best thing, better than any vegetable in our refrigerator. So the first thing I start with is very, very simple 1A is dandelion. And with dandelion, you pick those leaves, and in many places you can pick the leaves all year round, and they're very bitter, and what they do is they really help you to digest your food, and they stimulate digestion, but they are bitter, and many people were not raised with the bitter flavor in their diet, and so I have a whole blog on my website of how to get dandelion into your non-compliant family member's meal, but what you want to do is mince it like you would parsley or chives or into the smallest pieces possible and use it as a garnish, you know, just kind of sneak it into even something that's cooked or added on fresh like you would parsley or chives and just start using it as a garnish so that people can start to develop that taste for bitters. But dandelion greens, they are everywhere. They're very high in beta carotene. They're the highest known vegetable source of vitamin A, the precursor to vitamin A. So we know that vitamin A is an amazing antioxidant, really good for the eyes. You know, it's high in vitamin A, high in vitamin C, B vitamins. It's a nutrient-dense, mineral-rich food.
I think somehow it's in our psyche that the produce aisle at the grocery store, where we know it's safe, it's a different species or plant than the dandelion that you get outside. And while it might be, you know, a different variety, it is still dandelion. So the classic meadow that is unsprayed somewhere in the wild, that is dandelion that you would usually spend $4, $5, $6 for at a grocery store that you could just harvest in 10 minutes yourself.
It's true, and sometimes the reason why it's so different in the grocery store is because they plant it in a nice fluffy bed and give it water every day, but the dandelion that's growing out in the wild, it, you know, it is not grown with such care, and it'll grow without even water, and so sometimes it'll be really, really small, but depending on how much water it gets. But yeah,
sure.
You know, and in many grocery stores, you can't get dandelion, but it's, you know, it's just the weed. It's a superfood. People are really into superfoods and super greenness.
It's
your
true.
Dandelion is as good as any expensive powder, green powder that you're going to buy anywhere.
And I love your suggestion to mince it. That's a great one. So tell us about some other ones. So we've talked, you mentioned mustard greens, you've mentioned dandelion greens. What else is out there that you really like to forage?
Okay, I love mallow, Malva neglecta, or it's sometimes called cheeseweed, and it is a weed that it grows in ditches and animal pastures and the edge of the field. It really grows anywhere. It's just a very, very common weed, and have someone show it to you, and it is another superfood. It's very high in minerals, and it's really, it's one of these foods. It's very anti-inflammatory. It has a mucilaginous quality to it, and it kind of like okra okra, or we don't have enough mucilaginous foods in our diet. And mucilaginous foods are really important because they help to soothe, cool, and heal the gastrointestinal lining. And one out of every three Americans has some sort of gastrointestinal disease, inflammation. So we need foods that help to cool and soothe and heal our gastrointestinal tract. And mallow is one of those foods that has a slightly mucilaginous quality to it, and it's very soothing and cooling and healing to the entire digestive tract. We consider it a tonic. It's an amazing food, and you can just pick the leaves. Again, I'm really big on mincing. Everybody kind of garnishes. We do the garnish with the chive and sour cream potato thing, but think of adding some kind of fresh herbal garnish to every meal to help you digest your meal. And so mallow and dandelion are two great herbs to mince and just have on the table to garnish. Now, you can also dry both of those leaves. Just bring them in the house, dry them, hang them up, or put them on a screen and dry them. And then you can powder them yourself and just add them to your smoothies, your green drinks, or sprinkle on top of your salads. And you will be adding a whole other level of nutritional density to your meals.
So you brought up something just listing where to harvest that you touched on before. When you go out, of course, you want to find an area that you know has not been sprayed by city or park services with any pesticide or lawn care, quote unquote, materials, ideally really in the wild to some degree where you know very little impact has been made by humans, at least no materials have been applied. Also stay away from streets and kind of runoff water, even rainwater from the roads that can come in. You mentioned now an animal field. Would you harvest anything from a field that has livestock on it if you are careful with cow manure, for example? Like, how can you make sure that the food you're harvesting is pathogen free?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how the animals are kept. I mean, if there's too many animals on a small patch, and it's just, that doesn't work. But if you have large, and the animals have enough space and your plants aren't just sitting in manure, that's fine. One of the questions that my students always ask me when I teach them, like, how to make tea is they say, well, what kind of water do I use? And I always have to go through this whole thing about how there's hardly any clean, nobody has clean water anymore, and you have to do the best you can. And it's kind of the same thing. It's like, do the best you can. I mean, it's not everybody has access to the wild, and get as far away as you can from the grass runoff and the street runoff and everything. But if you live in the middle of the city and you have a little patch or a little garden that you love, even though, you're surrounded by city pollution, I would say you love that piece of land. You could go there. You could do that. But again, you want to try to stay away from the pollution and do the very best you can.
Yeah, don't harvest next to an airport. In return, once you find something edible and it's in a good environment, how in return can we make sure we can harvest without actually harming the environment? Like, is there kind of a technique? I know usually it's like, take 3 or 4 leaves, but don't take the whole plant because you want to come back. Is that kind of the golden rule for you?
The golden rule for me is that I have an awareness of how much of that plant is around, mm-hmm. and what that plant is. So for me, there is no such thing as really over-harvesting dandelion. There's just not. What I like to do is teach the really abundant, overgrown weeds that it's okay. But there is this way of, like, if you're wild foraging, you want to stop, and you don't take the biggest thing, you don't take the first thing, and you stop and you ask and you tune in and you look, you take time to see, well, how much of this is growing? Is it abundant just where I am? Is it abundant in the whole area? Or is this the only patch for miles around? There's a level of ecological awareness that you need to have about the place that you're doing your foraging.
That's really helpful to know that, because I think that as we're considering how to do it safely and how to enjoy it, we also need to be mindful about how we take it from the earth. And before we move on any further down that line, I just want to give you an opportunity to share any additional favorites that you love to forage.
Okay, I love to forage purslane. Do you know purslane?
Yes.
It's in some of the markets now. but it is a weed, and it loves sun. And you know, I'll go to a farm, and they'll just have mounds of purslane that they've pulled out as a weed that's just driving them crazy. It is so invasive and spreads. But I love purslane, and this plant, it just spreads. It grows wild. It goes crazy. You can't overharvest it, and it's full of essential fatty acids and B vitamins. It also has that mucilaginous quality that I talked about. So it's a digestive tonic. It's a digestive aid. It's a brain food, and it's the best vegetable of anything in the supermarket. When I go pick it out of somebody's backyard and I bring it in, I go, okay, this is better than anything you've got in your refrigerator. Let's eat this. I love doing that.
And it's funny. Purslane is one of those examples of a crop that is a weed, and yet it has now become hip or modern or really being recognized for its health benefits and for its flavor if it's prepared well, just like purslane and nasturtiums. I remember nasturtiums, nobody paid attention to them over the last 20 years, really. And now you can buy them at the farmer's market, and you can get, you know, it's like the alternative to your little grape leaf. There's now nasturtium salads, even though it is an invasive weed. It's definitely a weed that spreads quickly and grows quickly, and that farmers now harvest and bring to the farmer's market. It's amazing to see how the awareness around those wild edibles and wild weeds are entering our culinary world, and the awareness is changing around that. Are you seeing that too?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, yeah. I'm seeing purslane at the market, nasturtium at the market. I mean, especially when you get something like purslane that's high in vitamin A, vitamin C, essential fatty acids, and B vitamins, and you just start eating more of these. You know, when the healthier you eat, the better you feel, and the more you want that.
Well, and I think it's the context that really informs the way people have been doing it lately. If they see dandelion greens or mustard greens at the grocery store, or if they see purslane.
Yeah,
exactly. It gives them some context that this is an edible, whereas when they're out in the wild, they don't necessarily think that, because there are a lot of things in the wild that aren't edible, whereas everything at your grocery store in your produce department is. So it's the context that's really setting this up for people. And I remember I had seen purslane show up on a lot of restaurant menus in New York about 10 years ago. And the tips that you've been putting into your conversation about mincing them and developing a taste for the bitters, I think are really helpful in getting people to try new things and incorporate into their diets. And I think purslane is something that has been sauteed and wilted.
The other thing I love to do with the mallow, the purslane, the dandelion, the plantain, all of it, is saute it or steam it with other greens. So especially if you're new to this, or if you're really into it and not everybody you live with is into it, which is very common, you want to mix it in with your chard and your kale and your other veggies, you know, or your stir fry. You can just throw it in your stir fry and mix it in with other things so that it's not, you know, so especially if it's a new thing.
Sure. Love it. How can we use this knowledge to empower society? How will our ecosystem benefit, and what's needed?
Oh, I love that question. So, you know, my website is livingawareness.com, and the course that I'm creating right now is called Herbal Kitchen Remedy Solutions, and it's really about a home wellness movement where we connect deeply with our bodies, we connect with the earth, and then how do we, through that relationship, how do we remember really how to take care of ourselves? How do we teach our children and raise our children in a home where wellness is a consideration, where what we eat, how we harvest, how we use our spice rack is part of what we teach our children and what is important for us as a culture. I'm very, very interested in the revival of herbal medicine and herbal use in the home to recreate this home wellness movement, where we can become more empowered and less reliant on all the messages that are coming to us all the time about what we should eat and what drug we should take. And that's not going to stop. All that whole world is not going to stop, but what we can do is continue to build and accumulate our knowledge about our bodies and our relationship with the earth and the plants, and fortify ourselves with that.
I love that so much. And the opportunity for us to, in our education and practice and experience, become mentors for another generation. And that is such a strong statement that I take away from this interview. And something that I took away from our previous interview with you, the one on the healing power of herbs and the wisdom of ancient remedies, was a story you told about, you know, when you collect your herb and whatever it happens to be, or your flower, I think in this case you're talking about rose petals, and you use it to make a tea, and you leave it on the stovetop throughout the day, and you and your family are drinking this tea, and then at the end of the day, whatever is left, you pour into the bathtub. And it just, it had such a completeness to it, the way that you allow yourself to benefit completely, and the way that you're teaching these practices to your family. And I look forward to being able to share all of this with my young nieces and nephews, because there is something really empowering and really connective when you live this way. So thank you so much.
Pleasure to have you, and you may go now and go to the to the wild and forage.
I love talking with you guys.
I know that's what you really want to do, but thanks for spending the hour with us. Lovely to have you, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you, and thank you for all your work.
Yeah, thank you too. Take care.
Bye, Cammie.
That's Cammie McBride again, the author of The Herbal Kitchen, livingawareness.com, her website, and amazing woman, amazing work, who joined us today from Vacaville, California, in this hour on foraging wild edibles outside your front door, and in a way, so much more than that.